session, the Honorable Chief Justice.
Good morning, please be seated. First matter on calendar this morning is State of Nevada versus Pearson. Understand we have other parties, the First Judicial District Court of State of Nevada, in and for the County of Story, and the Honorable James E. Wilson, District Court Judge. If parties are ready to proceed, please do so. If you wish to reserve time, let us know, and please announce who is making argument for our record.
Chief Justice Douglas, Justices of the Nevada Supreme Court, may it please the Court, my name is Bill Maddox. I'm the District Attorney of Story County, and I represent the State of Nevada in this matter and the petitioner. I don't want to stand up here and repeat everything that's been put in the brief, so I am going to be brief, something I know lawyers commonly say and then aren't. I'm just going to make some observations, and if you have some questions, I'm sure I'll have plenty of time left. When I first started practicing law, as many of you might know, I was a deputy DA here in Carson City, and back, and that was 77, 78. At that time, the defense attorneys were still proposing the instruction that rape charge is easy to make but difficult to prove. And right around that time, probably preceding that, and since then, we have obviously given victims more protections than they were given when I first started. I think probably Governor Miller, who was then the district attorney down in Clark County, was instrumental in getting a lot of laws passed and a lot of actions taken to protect the victims. So the victims have a place in our process now, more so than they did when I started. First one of these kinds of cases that I ever tried, it was Cunningham v. State that came up to this court. Cite to that is 100 Nevada 396. I started my case at 9 o'clock in the morning and concluded my case in chief at 11:30. I had four witnesses. I had the victim. I had a previous victim that the defendant had molested some 14 years before. Same exact kind of molest. It had been reported to Clark County Sheriff's Department, so there was a record of it, so it was a good prior bad acts evidence. Once the defense attorney started questioning or asserting that my victim in his cross-examination had recently fabricated things, I put on the police officer who just testified to facts. He wasn't testifying as any kind of expert. He didn't testify about any training he had. He just testified to his interview of the defendant. He testified about his interview of the victim, and then I put the victim's mother on. So there were four people, and that was it. And the case went up to this court, and the court affirmed that conviction. The issues aren't that were raised in the appeal aren't that important. But since
and here you say psychologist or psychiatrist, though.
No psychiatrist, no psychologist.
Yeah, well, I go back to 1970, where cases were put on like that, and you're right. They were short-cutted through the system, and there was no, quote, expert testimony, unquote, as to domestic violence or to the actions of a potential sexual assault victim, whatever.
I agree.
So I agree with you, Mr. Maddox, on that issue.
And I know what started happening is in instances such as in this case where the obvious question the defense attorney wants to cross-examine the victim on is, well, why did you take so long to report it? And sometimes it isn't intuitive as to why that's the case. So what did prosecutors start doing? They start calling psychiatrists or psychologists. I don't know if I agree with that or not. At least in the beginning, I think a lot of the psychiatrists and psychologists were basically vouching for the truthfulness of the victim. I think this court's reined that in some in the sense that
May I ask you a question, though? What precisely, if this court were to say Dr. Lippert does not testify, is there any other relief that you seek by your writ petition?
I would like to have Dr. Lippert testify, but in response to your question, I don't think she should be allowed to testify specifically about this victim. But when the question's asked, well, why did you take so long I would like to have Dr. Lippert come in and say, not specifically about this particular victim, but that it's not unusual for people under circumstances like this to delay. If the question comes up, well, why did you stay married to this man for 20 years if you're constantly being subjected to this kind of abuse? I would like Dr. Lippert to testify generally that it's not abnormal. So there's nothing abnormal about a woman who's, in this case, and if you read all the way through the Petrocelli hearing and the preliminary examination, who's been subjected to verbal and psychological and physical abuse, it's not unusual.
So, Mr. Maddox, I want to focus you for a moment on what you believe the district court did that we should reconsider. What's the error below?
Well,
the legal error.
I think just saying no testimony by Dr. Lippert, because this court in the past, and I have the cases here in front of me, and I can refer to them if you want me to, has said that it's differentiated between specific testimony in regards to the victim versus general testimony, which is what I'm talking about. So to just absolutely preclude Dr. Lippert from testifying at all in terms of the general reasons for why.
The court has had a reason, at least the record would suggest that the court had a reason for making that order. Would you agree with me?
Yes, I would.
Yeah,
yes,
well, that's yes, where we might need to begin.
But at some point, you know, the procedural history of this is not good at best, the way this case has proceeded. Whenever I did Petrocelli hearings, and there was no such thing as a Petrocelli case when I was doing them, but I always noticed the defense ahead of time of the prior bad acts evidence I planned to put in. And I spelled out exactly what it was. In this case, that was developed at the Petrocelli hearing as opposed to there being notice to the defense ahead of time. Mr. O'Mara started issuing subpoenas that he probably shouldn't have been issuing. And I just think that a blanket denial of our ability to call, and I suppose if we have to...
Based upon your noncompliance with the court's order.
And the problem I would have there is the way the noncompliance arose, I don't think warrants a blanket prohibition against using a psychiatrist or psychologist in this case. And the other thing is it's as a result of orders which this court has never said a district court could enter, which is requiring that an adult victim of a sexual assault has to submit to a psychological examination. And because it arose that way, and I'll grant you that we should not, there would have been better ways to present our argument about this than was, I still don't think that, I think we ought to be able to call, if not Dr. Lippert, as psychiatrist at the trial in this matter. And
Mr. Maddox, isn't that the heart of what we're here about, and that is the opposition that was offered by the state in terms of the request and what was actually objected to?
I don't understand your question, Justice Douglas.
The nature of the request, the report, and how what that report is deemed?
Well, if you're talking about Dr. Lippert's report, it certainly looks like the intent was to call Dr. Lippert to testify specifically about this victim. And again, I think Justice Cherry and I agree.
But it's what Dr. Lippert actually produced and what it's morphed into seem to be two different things.
I agree.
And I agree. That's what my focus is in terms of the objection was not that this exceeded the scope of what Lippert was going to testify to and got us into a whole different area.
I agree.
So the court, based upon that, issued this order.
I agree.
Because there's some trepidation or concern that we have that was this really, well, what type of expert testimony was being offered? And then on the backside, what was asked for? Was that in excess of? But it kind of missed and we didn't have anything that then came to us and say, the court erred. And now we have an order by saying, do this, that wasn't challenged earlier. Are we compelled to say, the court has issued an order, you have to follow it?
After reading all of the cases on the child victims, I conclude that this court wanted this case up here and wanted oral argument on it, because the principal issue is whether or not a court has the authority to issue an order requiring an adult sexual assault victim, or for that matter any victim, to be psychologically examined.
Is that issue still alive for our review? I mean, it seems to be moot. Didn't she subject herself to an IME?
She started out doing that, I agree, but my understanding at least, and I was not involved in this, the only involvement I've had is as a district court judge to arraign the individual and to continue the trial in this matter, but I don't think that ended up being successful.
Well, isn't there a residual issue, though? She submits to the IME, so if that's out of this case, there remains the issue of this woman's medical records and whether they're subject to discovery pursuant to an order that says, state, if you want to call a general witness on the pathology of a domestic violence victim's veracity or timing and so forth, you're going to have to order this woman to give up her medical records. Is that conditional order still part of this case? In other words, you can't put your expert up to testify generally about domestic violence victims without compelling this victim to sign a med record release.
You know, I don't think it's that clear. I think Judge Wilson at one point said, I'm not going to let you get any of the Petrocelli stuff in that I've already authorized, and I'm not going to let you call a psychiatrist. But there was never any differentiation between, I'm not going to let you call a psychiatrist both as to this specific victim and generally. And then all of a sudden the order comes out. First of all, it didn't address what he threatened before, which is the Petrocelli, the prior bad acts. And it just blanket didn't address whether or not we couldn't call him generally or specifically. And this all arose out of this business of ordering turning over her medical and psychiatric or psychological records, and the court's ordering an adult victim to submit to a psychological examination. And I understand she somewhat submitted to it. My understanding was that she may have walked out of it at some point in time because of what was going on in that examination.
Well, Mr. Maddox, the November 24th letter from Dr. Lippert says this about the victim. She was told that the evaluation was not confidential and results would be written in a report and forwarded to the Lyon County District Attorney's Office. She agreed to the evaluation and signed a release of information form for the results of the evaluation to be provided to you. As this litigation proceeded, my understanding is that the district attorney's office instructed her not to sign a release that had been requested by the judge or ordered by the judge when she'd already signed a release with the person who had given the report. Now, is that true?
I think that what the district attorney's office said was you don't have to.
But she already had.
I agree she did with Dr. Lippert.
How broad was this release?
You know, in the way this developed and the way that we, that's why I say the way this case is proceeded procedurally, and I know they're making the argument that somehow or other she waived her right. I definitely agree that we had to produce anything that Dr. Lippert had because she was our forensic psychologist, but whether or not we had to, there's a Dr. Sousa that was her treating psychologist. There was a Dr. Dunlap that was a family physician. To just carte blanche have to turn over all of these otherwise private records, and that's why I say this is not proceeded very well. And I think there needs to be some clarification by this court as to whether or not this court believes that a district court judge has the authority to order these, to make these kinds of order in an adult victim case. I know it's made them in the cases where you've got child victims, which is a horse of a pretty much different color, but that's what I would hope the court decided it wanted to order.
Mr. Maddox, in addressing that issue, though, it seems to me that the context of such a question has to be considered in light of the facts of this case. And the facts in this case that seem to me to be different from others is a situation in which the state proffers an expert, in which the expert has secured a release, seemingly fairly broad, from the sexual assault victim. That, to me, puts the question you pose in an entirely different light than the circumstance in which a district court judge, as you phrased the question, simply goes off and orders a psychological evaluation of an adult sexual assault victim simply because he or she, the judge, decides to. That's a quite a bit different question. I think context needs to be added to the question. Don't you agree?
I agree, and this may be a classic example of bad facts make bad law, because this, I mean, by implication, you could end up deciding in such a way that you decided something you didn't really mean to, which is that a district court judge can order an adult victim to undergo psychological evaluation. And I think there needs to be some clarification in this, and part of the reason that it's come here in a not very good procedural fashion is because there isn't a lot of clarity in this area of the law.
Well, I think also the problem is that it has to also do with Petrocelli, with evidence of prior bad acts. Mm-hmm. Because of the mix, we may be zooming in on the fact that it was a sexual assault case and looking at the examination by Lippert versus the fact that it's domestic violence. And this was a husband and wife situation. And you're right, bad facts do make bad law.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have enough facts to be able to separate the prior bad act issue from the psychological psychiatric part of this case.
Well,
I hope I'm clear on that. I hope everybody understands where I'm going on this. Because if there hadn't been an issue, if this was just a sexual assault without it being a husband and wife situation with prior bad acts, I think we could... We have enough facts, but now we don't, because we don't know about the prior bad acts that the state would want to put in about what this man did to his spouse.
I would also invite the court, if it wants to remand this back, and maybe I can assist in getting it more procedurally sound for the issue to be brought back to this court.
Mr. Maddox, you've used up all your time. We'll give you 3 minutes once the real party in interest has presented their issues for us. Mr.
Meyer.
Good morning. Good morning, Chief Justice Douglas and Justice of the Supreme Court. May it please the court. My name is David O'Mara, and I represent Mr. Eric Pearson, who is the real party in interest in this case. Mr. John Lambros, who is with the Nevada Attorneys for Criminal Justice, is also here to help facilitate your questions and hopefully add some insight into this information. We've agreed to allow him 5 minutes of our time. However, if the court feels that it's necessary to open up a question to him throughout any part of my speech, please do so. That way we can move this forward and not have to break it up and worry about the 5 minutes. Before we got here today, the court issued an order that specifically asked us to address two issues. One is, does the district court have the authority to order the state to provide medical records and psychological records of a sexual assault victim? And two, was the court correct in precluding the state from presenting expert testimony? And while I believe the simple answer to both of those questions is yes, we need to put this case into context. And I think Justice Hardesty put it into context in his last question about this isn't about the defense coming out and trying to get a psychological evaluation of an alleged sexual assault victim. It's the defense trying to make sure that their client has a fair trial, because it's the state that has put this in issue, not the defense. The state, who was ordered at the arraignment by Judge Maddox to produce records of Dr. Souza, And what did the state do? The state went around and got a different expert and then used that information by Dr. Sousa to get that information in. So therefore, they bootstrapped Dr. Sousa's testimony without allowing that to allowing Dr. Sousa to testify.
Has Ms. Brown submitted to the IME? Is that piece of this case out?
Well, Justice, I think that she has submitted to the IME, but not entirely to the IME, because in order to conduct a psychological evaluation, an evaluator must have all the information in front of them. They can't just rely on certain statements. They have to be able to look at medical records.
What specifically leads you to contend that her medical history is legitimately in play in this case?
The medical history is in play in this case because what the state is trying to do is bolster the claims of Ms. Brown to allow her into this case. And when you look at
So if they called an expert witness that was simply a general background testimony on the phenomenon of domestic violence victims living with the agony for several years before they report it, would that, in your mind, open up the door to compelled production of psychiatric records?
And with the facts that we have in this case, yes, it does, because of what has happened in regards to this case. Because we're looking at, back at issues of the Petruccelli hearing that are directly involved in the medical and the psychological history of this alleged victim.
But before we go back to this case, I'm asking as a general proposition, are you contending that a district court judge should have the authority to order production of a domestic violence victim's medical records whenever the state, as part of its prosecution, calls an expert to testify generally about the phenomenon of domestic violence victims delaying their police reports?
I guess the question could be, it depends on your, if your answer is just basically they're going to have just a generalized statement of what domestic abuse does without any implication of whatever the facts are to this case, then maybe not.
But okay, that's exactly my question. So you concede that in that situation it would be inappropriate?
For just that specific issue. But I don't. What we cannot concede is that just because that evidence could be ordered by the court to be produced for other issues in regards to that. So you can't just say just because the state's going to do a generalized expert, then we still don't get those psychological records as well as those medical records, because there's other issues involved in that case. And just like the state would be able to produce an expert as a generalized, then the defense would also be allowed to do the same type of generalized statement. What is happening in this case is the state is allowing itself to produce an expert in this case, specifically that has taken testimony as to an alleged victim, without allowing the defense to do the same thing.
Mr. O'Meara, could I interrupt you?
But Lippert did not have the victim's medical records either, correct?
Well, according to her report, we don't have, there's nothing that says that Dr. Lippert has all of her medical records or anything, but we do know that they did discuss those type of issues in regards to hepatitis C, as well as all the other things that have gone on in our life, which allows us and which allows defendants, which should allow defendants to be able to look at medical records to either confirm that there is something there, or there maybe there is an admission in the medical records that show that what she is telling the psychologist may not be what actually occurred based upon the actual documentation of other doctors. Sorry, Justice Hardesty, you had it.
Dr. Lippert's report recites four opinions. As near as I can read, three of those opinions deal specifically with Mrs. Pearson's past and her psychological issues. C is what might be considered a general opinion. And it says, it deals that it with the subject of delay in reporting. And it says her opinion is often associated with a number of factors, and then those factors are recited. Denial of the extent of the problems, the desire to maintain the relationship, poor self-esteem, fear, sense that reporting will not lead to change. I'm sorry for the length of this question, Mr. O'Meara, but the question is, would you have sought these medical records as if that was the extent of the Lippert opinion?
Yes, Justice Hardesty, I would be, especially the medical records. In regards to the medical records, we're talking about prior acts. I mean, we're talking about self-esteem. What happened in this woman's life over the last period of time that would have caused her for this delay? And one of the issues is the Petruccelli hearing, in which regards we have a incident in 1995 or 1996 is what the court determined, that a brass penis was inserted into her anus. Well, that medical history is important to find out. In fact, Ms. Brown specifically provided a colonoscopy or some medical document to the sheriff's department regarding that issue. But we can't. But the state refuses, and the court had ordered them to provide that evidence. It would show other, at least explain that document so that we could understand maybe there wasn't really something going on, or maybe there's something. I think it's really actually concerning for society as well as this court on how this case has evolved and the evidence. And it may not be something that this court looks at today, but in order for justice to be sought in this in these cases, each party has to do their job.
So what you're saying with respect to the one medical record you just referenced, that was given to law enforcement by the victim.
That's correct. But that's one document of, mm-hmm. of a lengthy medical history in regards to what has happened. I mean, we're talking about an issue.
And that wasn't provided to you by law enforcement as part of the discovery in the case or by the state?
The one page, yes, Your Honor. That one page. But you can't, if you're looking at one page, there's other medical documents in regards to what had happened, any follow-up that occurred. And if you look at her testimony, it's my understanding that that document was made a few days after either the allegation was made or a few days after this the so-called incident happened. But then she also testifies that she went back to the doctor when she was having problems going to the bathroom some months ago. And she had made the statement that the doctor has a record of it. Well, if the doctor has a record of it, why can't we get it? We should be allowed to do that.
Are there any records that the state has in its possession that you allege your client does not have pertaining to her medical condition?
The question would be, Your Honor, is what, I guess we're how you would define possession. I don't know. The state has said that they have no other medical records. We do know that they told Dr. Bicker that they had produced all the medical records to him, but we know that that is not, was a misrepresentation. Maybe some kind of statement that was just not intentional, but they did not provide Dr. Bicker with the so-called one document in regards to the penis.
But you do have the colonoscopy report.
That's correct. We do have that
fragmentary,
one
fragmentary, though, that record is.
That's correct. And but I,
before you go on, Justice Sata, I know you had a question earlier. Do you still have a question?
Yeah, I do. Do I understand your argument, counsel, that what you're seeking is not a blanket assertion of a right by a defendant to seek an IME or medical records, but instead on a case-by-case basis where certain evidence will be used to prosecute a case, the defense should in fact have enough information to properly cross-examine what is being put against the defendant, fundamental fairness?
I think that's exactly right. I don't think that there should be a blanket. And I don't think anybody has argued that in this case. We have asserted in regards to our request for the independent medical examination to follow the standards that the court put on with the child sexual assault. I don't necessarily think that those standards need to be followed, and that's a decision that maybe this court wants to look into. But when we look at what is going on in this case, we've looked at an individual. I mean, we're talking about the court, as Mr. Maddox has talked about, through the progression of the years that he's been an attorney. And now I don't have the experience he does, but what we're looking at is a situation where children, we can get an IME for a children if we meet the standards, but children are easily influenced. They don't have the wherewithal to understand what is going on or understand the state wants to use the psychological, and so the state provides that psychological and then may have to submit to another one. But here we have an alleged victim who was an adult who actively knew that she was going to take a psychological evaluation, that that was not confidential, that that would be used. She is an adult. Maybe the standard in an adult situation is different. Maybe the standard would be that if the state is going to use a psychologist in regards to a specific individual for the testimony, then an IME should be allowed by the defense to do the same thing. It allows for a fair playing field, and it allows for justice to be had in this in all cases. But there is a standard. Our standard was over the child, to follow the same child, but that doesn't mean that this court can expand it and make difference, because an adult certainly has more wherewithal to make a determination of whether or not they're going to assert to a psychological evaluation set forth by the state, as well as a psychological evaluation by the defense. And I think that the case law that we've cited throughout this case is fairly informative in regards to if the alleged victim or any witness denies the right of the defendant to do that, then that testimony should not be allowed.
Which is what the court did in this case.
And I'm expanding it, Your Honor, that I think that not only that does Dr. Lippert not be able to testify, but neither should Ms. Brown in regards to any of those medical issues, because she's not participating in allowing that information to happen, just like the Michigan case that was cited by the Nevada Attorneys for Criminal Justice.
But now you're talking about evidence, prior bad acts is what you were talking about that she couldn't testify to, a prior bad act, because you don't have the medical records.
Well, yes, that's correct. All the medical records or any testimony as to whether regard of any medical issues that she has.
I want to ask you on the other side of Justice Sada's question to make sure that my colleagues understand where I'm coming from on this. If it was not a husband and wife situation, a sexual assault where the people didn't know each other, some guy grabbed a lady off the street, had sexual assault, and she delayed reporting. There's no doubt in my mind, at least, that you could have a general expert testify on delay in reporting without having this victim submit anything. Am I correct? Or at least you...
And I think that when I was addressing Justice Pickering, I said that a general, without any other facts,
right,
or any of the other acts, I think that is correct, because the defense would also have that opportunity to also have an expert talk about general facts as well.
And we're just talking about people that don't know each other, sexual assault, and delay in reporting, that issue. I just want to make sure that we understand that. Because I don't want to make a blanket rule either that you can't have a general expert in sexual assault cases.
Counsel, any members of the court have any additional questions of this counsel? Because I know he was attempting to save some time for Mr. Lambros, and we've chewed up his time pretty well.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Mr. Lambros, we'll give you 5 minutes to make your presentation.
Thank you, Chief Justice Douglas, Associate Justices. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of NACJ as amicus on this case. And we scrupulously tried to address our briefing to the questions that the court asked us to brief. And respectfully, I would say that I don't think that our colleagues on the in the district attorney's side of the amicus equation did the same thing. And I would suggest that their brief simply asks this court to disregard the Abbott rule, or if not disregard it, to overrule it to the extent that Abbott applies. I think the question is much more interesting than that. And these very, very odd facts and circumstances have presented what I think is a very, very compelling question that this court can probably resolve in a remand order that will make it clear to Judge Wilson what he needs to do in order to conduct what I think needs to be in a very extensive in limine hearing to determine what evidence is admissible and what evidence the defendant should receive. The question regarding the psych evaluation is moot, but the factors are extremely important, the Kouchner-Abbott factors. And I would just emphasize to the court that it's not amicus's position that that an alleged rape victim with bipolarity and other problems, substance abuse addiction, and hepatitis C can never be truthful. We're not saying that. But what we are saying is that when we have those very unusual combination of factors arise, that when the state, when the defendant can show that the state has conceded that there's no corroborating evidence, and the record's clear on that, Judge Wilson made findings with in that regard twice, that the state will benefit by evidentiary, by expert assistance, either through testimony or through the help in their case. That's the second Kortchner slash Abbott factor. And that it is clear, given the facts of the case, that the victim's emotional slash mental condition will affect her veracity. Then I think that's where Abbott, and this court's most recent decision in Wyman, I think is very instructive, comes into play, because at the end of the day, the district court, every district judge in this state has the general jurisdiction to resolve federal constitutional questions. And that is what's happening here. There's a very important due process consideration that must be balanced against Ms. Brown's privacy interests, which are compelling. I am not up here to suggest that rape victims have to defend themselves against, you know, their prior history or their mentality or anything else. That's not where we're coming from. But in this rather unusual situation, I think that the Michigan case that we cited in our briefs, the Stanaway case, gives this court some guidance. And the Stanaway case is a very, very, very tightly written decision that scrupulously follows the United States Supreme Court decision in Pennsylvania versus Ritchie. And what that court says is when a state district court is faced with exactly what Judge Wilson was faced with and what now this court is faced with, at the very least, that court needs to do what Justice Rose, sitting as a judge in this case, said back in December of 2009, and that was, or October of 2009, and that was, at the very least, the district attorney needs to provide or try to get the records for an in-camera inspection. And if the victim does not want to comply, then one of the sanctions that the victim needs to know about could be a preclusion of her testimony, and that's a sanction that Stanaway discusses, or a dismissal of the case. And obviously, if the victim in this case doesn't testify, the case will be dismissed. Now, isn't the
veracity, I mean, how do you draw the line on this? What if the crime asserted was her having been shot and she couldn't prove who did it? It was a he said, she said, and she delayed reporting it. She healed herself, but then she reported the shooting. Every other factor the same in this case. Would you say again that her medical history, her psychiatric history, was legitimately in play for purposes of discovery?
I, quite frankly, under that hypothetical, probably not, Justice Pickering, but I think that what this case is this case is closer to Wyman, where 35 years later, a sibling, with the help of psychotherapy, was able to unlock this deep, deep memory that had forever been hidden and come forward and testify against her mother, that her mother killed her little brother 35 years or earlier. What this court did in deciding the out-of-state witness question, in dicta, at the behest of the district attorney in the case, said, you know what, Stanaway might be a good way to resolve the privilege issue. And that's what we're talking about, and that's the enormous responsibility of the gatekeeping trial court, is that judge has to resolve that question after an in-camera inspection. And, you know, I mean, I do federal law, so I'm sanguine about that because I know that the records will be sealed. This court will see the records on appeal. The federal district court and the Ninth Circuit will see those records. So it's not like they're forever going to be lost. And it does satisfy the defendant's right to due process. I just wanted to answer Justice Pickering's question about whether or not Judge Wilson's order was conditioned on the sanction order was conditioned on the medical obtaining the medical records, and yes, it was, and it's in the record at the state's exhibits, page 184, and I quote: "If Ms. Brown's medical records are not provided to the court in camera by January 15th, I will have to reconsider my prior bad acts order, and I will have to consider whether the testimony from the psychologist the state intends to call will be admitted at trial." So it was conditional. Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak on this important issue.
Mr. Maddox.
And I'll say the same thing to this court that I said to Judge Russell when he first came over and we were going to become judges together. It's a slippery slope. If you start ordering psychiatric evaluations of victims in sexual assault, as adult victims, where do you stop? I think that's what the question you're trying to ask.
Mr. Maddox, so we have a fundamental issue. The court issued an order, and it was not responded to. So the court could not, as was just said, do its gatekeeping function.
I agree, Your Honor. If we get back,
that's one of the side issues. An order was made, and there was no response to that order. So what is the court to do?
If we go back, I'll do a trial memorandum setting forth every witness I'm going to call and exactly what they're going to testify to. And any Petrocelli stuff that I want to try to get in, it'll all be set out in that trial memorandum, and we can have hearings on it. And then the court can decide specifically, and I think it was Justice Pickering who was asking the question too, what medical records should be available? Are all? I think the order said it was way overbroad, more so than it should have been. I may agree with Justice Chair Justice Gibbons that as far as this insertion and consulting a doctor, because that was referred to, and I doubt seriously I'd present that evidence in a trial on this matter, just because if so, I think there would be, I think there should be a limited disclosure of those medical records to the defense.
So what is the relief you're requesting as the petitioner in this case at this point?
You'd have to ask that question. First of all, I do not want the court to come out with an order that allows psychiatric examination of adult victims. And it's a slippery slope. Once you do it in this case, then it's going to be in every case. What's the justification for denying it in a murder case or any other case? So you should not do that. I think this record's come up, and we maybe should have filed a motion for reconsideration or a motion for clarification before we petitioned this court on this order. But I don't think the record's settled enough in this case for you to make a decision. And I would, if nothing else, I would like the opportunity to clarify it better at the lower court as opposed to up here.
Any additional questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
This matter is submitted.